Hello and welcome to Holden Village again. Today is the July 24th, 2000, and tonight there's a forum, and it's entitled, What Will Your Congregation Do on 9-9-2000, which is about a year after 9-11-01. It's the closest Sunday to that date. Emily Kirsten-Grip is the moderator. And this is tape number FO 2002-32. Now let's go join them in the other room.
Good evening. I'm Emily Kirsten-Grip, and I'm on teaching staff here this week. And as is the case, I guess, every week here, on Monday night, the people on teaching staff get together and do some business. But the main order of business is figuring out if there's a topic that might be of interest to people in the community, where we want to all put our heads together and get ideas from one another. This week, the topic, I didn't write it down, but the topic is what is your congregation or your church going to do on September 9th in commemoration and in some way to recognize what happened a year before then. And so what we were thinking about, and please jump in if I'm wrong, what I remember talking about is wanting to get some sort of real practical ideas about what we can do, but also talking about what, in sort of a larger sense, what are the implications of our actions, the actions of our church in our community, and in a larger sense too. Initially, when we talked about this, because it's an issue that has a lot of strong emotion behind it for many of us, one thought had been that we'd break into small groups to discuss. With this size group, I feel like people are comfortable speaking in a group this size? It seems like we'd be able to let everybody be heard who wanted to. And also to remember that anything that does come up, I mean, we really want this to be the beginning of a conversation. So it's to be talked about, you know, over breakfast tomorrow or whatever. With this smaller group, I'll help sort of recognize people and help direct things if it needs it, but I'm not, you know, feel free if you feel like you want to say something and you're not getting in there, give me a wave and I'll help you out with that. Because we want to be sure that every viewpoint gets heard. And I think the other piece of it is that wanting to be sure that we're here to try to hear and listen to each other and to treat each other with respect, which includes the assumption probably that we're beginning with good intent, that all of us have good intent with this and have something to offer and something to learn from one another. And with that, there were three people on teaching staff who were connected to teaching staff who were willing to be sort of kick it off, to get it started, to get some thoughts out there for us to bounce off of and to go with. These aren't the opinions that we all have to either agree or disagree with for the whole evening, but it's just to sort of get the conversation going. So I don't know who would like to begin. Three of you. Okay, that's great.
I also have something to read permission to read. But for myself, and I hope for my congregation, that the September 9th will be, I pray, a time of mourning, both for the dead of September 11th and over 2000, and also for the many lives that were killed during the war. Over 4,000 or 5,000 people have died in that war. And I hope that it will be a day of repentance for those things that we have done that might be wrong, and for those things that we have not done that might be wrong. And I want to read, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, he's a Congressman Dennis Kucinich, I think, or something from Ohio. He wrote a beautiful letter, I think. It's a very long, I want to read two paragraphs from it that I think are pertinent for me at least, and maybe for you too. And he says, I offer this prayer for America. Let us pray that our nation will remember that the unfolding of the promise of democracy in our nation paralleled the striving for civil rights. That is why we must challenge the rationale of the Patriot Act. You must ask why America should put aside its guarantees of constitutional justice. And then he ends this long, quite long letter with the following. America, America, let us pray for our country. Let us love our country. Let us defend our country not only from the threats without, but also the threats within. Crown thy hood, America, crown thy hood with brotherhood and sisterhood, and crown thy good with compassion and restraint and forbearance and commitment to peace, to democracy, to economic justice here at home and throughout the world. Crown thy good, America, crown thy good, America, crown thy good. And the rest of the letter is just as good. It really is the best thing I've ever heard about September 11th.
Was that a letter sent to you?
No, we got it from somebody, but this was done in February 28th. I don't know exactly. It doesn't say where he did it, but whether it was in Congress or wherever he did it, but it's a long letter, and I just picked out two small portions of it, but maybe they got it off the web or something. I don't know, but it was sent to me. I appreciated it.
We can make room in our circle. Thank you. Would you like to go?
Sure. I think we all look at this through our own lenses, and so I've chosen to look at this through the lenses that I've been teaching on this week, and that is, in particular, leadership. As I think about September 9th coming, my understanding these days of leadership, to simplify for myself, I think leadership boils down to two duties. I think leaders are responsible for telling the truth as they see it, and because sometimes that can shake foundations and rattle cages, I think leaders are also responsible for pointing towards hope. So this is my attempt to do both of those, simply my humble opinion, but I'd like to find the courage to tell the truth as I see it. I think that since September 11th, national security has not existed, and I don't think it will ever exist again. I've been on about 30 airplanes since September 11th, and maybe you have this experience too. I can report that they seem much more concerned about my carry-on luggage. They x-ray it, they sniff it for bottom fragments, they unpack it, they frisk me, they take off my shoes and x-ray them. But from what I can tell, if I packed a piece of plastic about this big in my checked luggage that would be undetectable to x-rays, you know what that would be? It would seriously disrupt that flight and would be pretty much undetectable. So when I get on a plane these days, I try to be on good terms with my wife, try to be on good terms with my children, and then I confess to myself, this plane is not safe, and choose to make an intentional decision to go where I need to go. So I think we're about to spend $32 billion on something that cannot be bought. We can imagine 100 different ways to jeopardize security in this country. And I think that what we have right now is a rush to wave the flag, a rush to claim some things for our public psyche that simply can't be purchased. So I think global security is a myth. Excuse me, national security is a myth. And I would also, just an editorial comment, I would say for some in this country, national security has never existed. So now I'm responsible for pointing towards hope. I think if national security does not exist and will never exist again, then so where's the hope? And I think the hope is in global security. I think it's the only form of security that has ever existed. The only real boundary on this planet is it's called the atmosphere. And everything else, some human made up. So what I wonder, what I would like America to do, what I'd like my church to advocate for on September 9th is to do this. I would like America to spend 3/4 of its dollars concerned with security doing this, bringing fresh water to every child on the planet. Maybe you felt it a little bit this week. It's been very hot in the village, and how easily I've taken a cup of water into the dining hall and walked over to that cooler with lots of ice in it, and I just turned the spigot, and there it comes. And yet we know that 3/5 of the world's children do not have clean water. I think if America wanted to be secure, one of the things we could do is to make our enemies our friends. And I can't think of anything more powerful than pledging with every resource that we have to quench the thirst of every child on the planet. And I would like to recommend that we do that in the next decade, not by bringing bottled water to remote villages, but finding ways to find wells or pump water into every village in every country on the planet. And I think in doing so, we would change the, potentially have a significant impact on the world's public opinion of the United States, which I think in large part we probably thought of as arrogant. And I think it would be part of our own conversion process as Americans to see the intimate connections that we really do have, I think especially in God's eyes, with the rest of the human beings on this planet. So I would say let's quench the thirst of every child. Let's commit a decade to that. And I trust that America will be a lot safer if we do that.
Thank you. And I'm not sure I know how to pronounce your name correctly.
Mai.
Okay. Thank you.
I will be the representative from the Muslim, but not from the community, but as my faith. I would like to share my feelings about September 11. I found two things that appear in my mind. The first thing is hatred, and the second thing is love. Hatred is from the persons who create such an event like this. And the love is appear after these events happened. People who joys, who have part of these events, have love to share the painful, the suffering together. And as the developing country people, I would like to share my hatred, because what American policy did to the third world country, to my country, nobody here knows about that. Everything is behind the scene. You just heard about what good thing that your government here did, but nothing bad. In other world, in other country. But I would like to share love as a Muslim, because I feel ashamed that my brothers, some of my brothers, did these kind of things, because the ideas of killing the innocent people is not the teaching from Islam. But sometimes I have to open my mind when I saw the pictures of the Palestinians. I talked to Harold that if I were the Palestinians, I would like to overcome this situation by sending the new generation to study abroad and try to develop and overcome by wisdom. But when I heard some of the students from Palestine, talking about the curfew. They have no chance even to walk outside. They have the limit of the time to go and find out the food to survive. How can they have that kind of opinion? Now I rethink about what I see the pictures of other people. I think sometimes when we heard or read about the news or evidence that happened, it may not be whatever we imagined according to our experience. It may have another side of the reason. And one thing that we have to realize is that we could not stand in that person's mind because our experience are different. We could not understand why they have such kinds of behavior, except we have to find out the original reasons why these people have to do such a things. And I think this is a good time for us, not only for Americans, but also the Muslim, have to have a good conversation, try to understand what kind of feeling that each of us have and share that. And that will be the only way to create peace. Because when we talk about politics, those politicians try to fight in order to overcome or control. But for normal people, we would like to live in peace because we need the security. We need to stay and survive for our families and people. I think this is...
I appreciate what people have brought. A couple of folk have come in. At this point, I'd like to open it up to more discussion, questions, thoughts. Yeah.
I just maybe make a request that
sure.
we sort of check the time.
I was
out.
Just going
to
say.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I do. We were supposed to start at 9:45, but Vespers ran late. We started late. We didn't start till close to 9. Would folk like to go until 10? Is that, or do you want me to call it at 9:45? Is that time? Any strong opinions? Okay, we won't go past 10. And if our discussion leads us to ending point before that, that's great. So.
Can I recommend, just a slight modification, can I recommend that we set a focus for 9:45, and if we choose to extend it to 10,
okay.
we do that?
We could do that. People are tired, I'm sure. I'm very interested. Yes, that's, are folk okay with that? Okay, that'll be the modification. So we'll be aiming for about 25 minutes from now, unless we want to keep going.
Like so many tough issues, I don't know whether anyone's average, but the ordinary people that I mingle with back home would be more listeners. And I think most of us are listeners, except for people that do do have more information. But I think that most of us are just totally confused on what to do. You know, we can hear the things like, if we're really sold on peace and justice issues and speaking out, but there's so many people that are too timid, and I wonder how to motivate myself as well as others to speak out and to make some statement, even from the pulpit, that is meaningful and is powerful. Leaders are sometimes hard to come by.
I think one of the biggest things we need to do is understand one another, as Christians, to understand our Muslim neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And that the only way you can do that is through communication, through listening and talking, and education. And I guess the one thing I can think of to encourage my congregation then is to ask that we maybe invite some of our Muslim neighbors to our church. Just to have a time where we can socialize for one thing, and maybe to know one another, to know our customs and our cultures.
But I think that to do it right, you have to have enlightenment and information coming to you, but then you have to have the guts to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talk is so cheap these days, and everyone's talking in those big platitudes about all the things that we should be doing, but it seems like not enough people are doing them. And I blame myself, too. I work with Habitat, but that's one little thing, but the problem is so much bigger.
One thing, excuse me, as a chaplain in a hospital when September 11th happened, our staff immediately worked to put together some sort of prayer service that day. In the Midwest, in Iowa, you know, we do have diversity in our community. We have African Americans, we have Hispanics, we have a lot of Bosnian and Croatian immigrants, and so we do have some Muslim representation. But what concerned me the most was that kind of knee-jerk reaction to what I label American civil religion. The superabundance of American flags everywhere, in every way, shape, and form. Mm-hmm. The expectation that everyone put one on, mm-hmm. or you were somehow a traitor to your country, or that you fly one, or there was something wrong with you, and you would be under suspicion. Also, the hyper concern, I think this is a natural thing for all of us. I mean, when you saw the planes going into the buildings, you thought business, you thought Anglo-American business person in that building. But the reality was there were people from many nations working in those buildings, of many races, of many cultures, of many languages, of many countries, not just citizens of the United States, and not only Anglo, and not only Christian. But somehow in our psyche, at least in my area, that all got wrapped up into being identified as Anglo-Christian, and the flag was stamped on top of it. And I personally had a hard time with that. And I know it comes out of my life experience of living overseas, being a minority, and having a growth and sensitivity toward that. It's also a part of my vocation. I'm a diaconal minister. A part of that is thinking of the least of these. It's just how I'm wired. But I think one thing we can do as Christians is keep clear what is Christian and what is American civil religion, if you know what I'm speaking of, and how that all gets entangled, and keeping good boundaries. I'm not saying we shouldn't be patriotic, but I think there's a place for patriotism, and there's a place for Christianity, and sometimes they appropriately are interwoven. But I think to impress on Christianity this American civil religion does us more harm than good, or potentially could. An example of that from our experience was that week, the administrators of our hospital immediately wanted us to have a service. And here were these business people trying to tell us chaplains how we should set up this service and what we should do. We were in dialogue with them, and they wanted to sing God Bless America and all of these patriotic songs, and we just said we don't feel that's appropriate for our service, if you want to do it before or you want to do it after, but if we're coming, if you want us to have a prayer service, then we'll have a prayer service. So we had to work on being sensitive yet educating. And I think we did that very well. Some of the biggest adversity in our community, specifically in our healthcare community as an institution, are our physicians. And so we organized another service, excuse me, for later when President Bush asked that we all have this special service, this special day. And the way we handled that was that we are a Catholic-sponsored institution, but it's not a Catholic institution. So we had diversity, and what we did was we went to doctors who are our biggest diversity of community and asked them, would you share with us a reading from your Holy Scripture or a prayer when we all come together? And so we had a Jewish doctor read to us from the Old Testament and a psalm and a prayer. We had a Muslim doctor from the Quran, some verses. We had a Sikh and a Shiite read to us. We had a Hindu doctor talk to us. And then we had Catholic prayers and Protestant prayers and readings and some hymns. Interestingly, that did more than we ever anticipated it would, because one of our new doctors was very frightened. His wife brought his food to him in his office because he wears a turban as an expression of his faith. And for fear of the misconception in the community of who's Muslim and who's not, he was very, very frightened. I went and visited with him in his office just to see how he was doing.
I like what you're saying.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's too. But anyhow, to cut to the end, thank you, it brought healing for all of those involved. It brought them back into community rather than being on the margins. And in that, it informed us and created more sensitivity. So my prayer is that we work more toward those kinds of things than waving flags to show how patriotic we are.
I attended a similar, excuse me, similar service to that. I'm from the Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and it was sometime after 9/11 that they had an interfaith service in St. Paul, and they had members from the Muslim community, Jewish and Christian, and they all participated in the service. It was, I don't know, an hour, hour and a half long, 2 hours, something like that, and they had readings and songs and everything, and it was quite a, it was a powerful evening, and they encouraged at the end for people to either make a commitment, I believe they handed out some materials on that, and to visit each other's churches, places of worship. That was the only one that I know of. I'm sure they had many of them, and I don't know the long-term results. And we did also at our churches, Linda said, I think this was set up just probably before 9/11, because it was the latter part of September. We did have, just as an informational forum, between services, we had a member of the Muslim community, the Hmong community, and I think it was the Spanish community, because this was in Richfield, and there is a growing community of all of them. And it was for informational. We only did it once, and I'm sure there was some benefit from it. I don't know the long-term benefit. Haven't heard too much since then.
I think almost all of the churches, we've gone through some of the similar things in Muslims out. My feeling now is, where should we go from here?
Correct.
They've done these things, and they've been recognized, and how can we go and do something now for the future growth, like you said?
Yeah.
We've got to look to the future. And I think we need ideas for this. And where should we go? And how should we do it? How can we keep it positive so foreigners feel good about the United States instead of hating the United States?
Yeah. One of the concerns I have is that as we anticipate September again, that this issue is not reduced to a Christian versus Muslim problem, because it's so much greater than that. It's a clash of cultures. It's the civil religion is just so alive and well. I've been trying to figure out, I've actually done some work anticipating that. And I was just thinking, I'm a pastor, I was going to do some work addressing the reality of evil in the world and how that's manifested in various ways in ourselves and globally and elsewhere. I'm thinking if I would touch on the Muslim Christian connection there, but that really is, from my perspective, not a major theme at all. It's really a culture clash between just the hatred of America and American foreign policy. The fact that they attack the symbols of Western capitalism really is that they're hitting the symbols of American civil religion and hitting us right in the gut. So that tells me it's a whole lot more than just religion, and we need to deal with it in a much broader perspective.
I found myself being somewhat excited. I mean, this sounds odd, but when the attacks occurred, there was a certain excitement I had because it seemed like our economy was so out of proportion. There was so much wealth in the country. There was such consumption. And I thought, wow, here's an opportunity for us to really look at ourselves. I mean, yes, it's a tragedy, but what is the meaning of this, and what is the world perception of us? And it seems like there has not been a lot of national introspection. And it seems to me that that is a role that the church can take on in helping lead national introspection. It seems like instead, though, the whole country is sort of acquiescing to an attitude that we must be at war. We must be at war. And without introspection. And we bomb people from the air and are sad about it, sort of. And then go on. And it's like just one day of news after another. And if there's anything that concerns me, it's the lack of thought about who we are as a people and the lack of national discussion about that.
Can we let her in the circle? Actually, both of you. Anyone who's not in, if you'd like to be in, you can make room. We had a quick follow up here, and then I saw somebody over there. Is that all right?
Yeah, I think that what you just said is very significant, very important. And that my hope would be that in the churches we focus on what it means to be peacemakers, and not just on security. It seems everything went towards the area of security. How can we make ourselves secure in this kind of world? And therefore, we want to eliminate the risks. And that might be totally impossible, as you were saying. But to be peacemakers actually means to involve risk, to take risk, because it means moving in other circles. It means enlarging the circle, as we just did. It means bringing people in ways that we hadn't thought of before. And I think there's a good biblical basis for being peacemakers. We can lift up those verses. The other thing is that we focused in on war and became a war. And in a war, like in an argument, somebody has to win and somebody has to lose. If you're in an argument, you try to win, and it becomes a game of chess then. If I win, you lose. And in a war on terror, it becomes either we win or or you win. So there has to be, in a conversation, and that's I think why introspection, in a conversation, you don't win or lose. You know, you can't say, I won that conversation. But you can say that in the conversation, I learned something new. I discovered insights and ways of looking at the world and at other people that I hadn't thought of before. And so instead of just bombing people from 35,000, if we actually got into conversation with many of these people there, who, by the way, they don't all hate Americans at all. They hate some of our policies, and many are angry. The anger hasn't yet focused on hatred as it has for some. It's more on the stage of anger. But conversation, I think, can actually bring us forward. And I would like to have churches actually do that. An alternative to a war on terror. What would be a Christian alternative to that? And to think hard about that.
I'm still thinking about the motivational part to get people mobilized. And when you say they hate our policies or issues, it would be nice to itemize what some of these are.
Sure.
We could.
We had a patient.
My comment was domestic in the sense of, well, we have a book over at the library, over at the bookstore called Bowling Alone. Mm-hmm. In our church, we address the problem of community, and that's what that book talks about. And it's kind of the history of the 20th century and how America at one point was very rich in its community concerns and its community growth, and now as we reach the 2001, you have seen in the last 20, 25 years a very steep decline. And it's an interesting discussion. It also brings up the values of America, the values of community, and also indirectly the church. And so I recommend that book, and I think that's a possibility to get at some of these issues, not directly, but just in terms of talking about the United States.
What was the name of it again?
It's called Bowling Alone. Bowling Alone. It's the name title comes from people don't bowl anymore. So you're bowling alone. All the bowling leagues have fallen. They're no longer exist.
Yeah.
Have we clarified what this war is about? What the conflict is about? I mean, I remember President Bush's speech, and he said, "We're fighting against lovers of freedom." Well, I think he named the wrong issue, but he was put it gently. But that was how he was trying to define. Here's the division: we love freedom, they hate it, and they're trying to destroy us. Well, we know that's not the issue. But is there a better definition of what we're dealing with in this that can be publicly discussed?
Yeah. Just a thought. I hope it's to your point, but I want to see if I can offer something that might nudge this conversation to a different level. If I were to make an analogy between what's going on now in black-white tensions in this country, I think for decades I can hear now, well, why don't we just have an open forum, get together with some African Americans, and we'll talk about our relationships, and we'll try to improve things. But what about the ongoing racism in America that goes on, sort of even as that discussion is happening? So, what I would like to reframe, and I would put it this way. At some point, the churches of Germany in World War II, only a small portion of them said that the state is asking us to sign on to something that is counter to the principles of our faith. And we give the confessing churches of Barmen, the 6-8% of the churches in Germany, who wouldn't sign on with the state. in this case, the United States has not asked the church to sign anything, except I think it has asked the churches to be silent, and I think for the most part we have been. So I would like the churches to find their voice. This is what I would like the church to ask of America. Will you develop a values-based foreign policy? And the three values I would recommend are: we will give favored nation trading status to any country in the world that does this, honors democracy, honors human rights, and honors the environment. And, you know, we would have to clean up our own act and those three in the process. But for, you know, at this point, you know, it's the oil, stupid.
Yeah.
You know? U.S. foreign policy in the last 50 years has put us in bed with some pretty strange people because of access to resources. And essentially our foreign policy is to ensure our largesse. So what would the church like to say to the state? And do we need the confessing churches of America?
I want to do a quick check-in. We're just a couple of minutes from when we said we would stop if this were the original ending time. Would people like to keep going for another 10 or 15 minutes?
Just getting wrapped up.
I was going to say, a lot of people haven't had a chance to talk yet. We haven't talked real practical pieces yet. So, all right. If people feel like they need to leave, none of us will shame you. What? You're going to bed? Another thing. Continue this conversation. Great. We've heard from some folk, and there are folk we haven't heard from at all, and I welcome other ideas or thoughts.
There's another book in the bookstore called Violence Unveiled, and some of the Holden community has done some study on that. And I'm still struck by the sacrificial part of this whole thing, that people would be willing to give their lives to, you know, to such destruction. And yet, this is what's been happening since the beginning of time. And when we respond in such a way, we also, you know, in a sense, put ourselves in that position. So I guess really what I would suggest is we need to educate people in what evil and what violence does to one another. I mean, and listening to the forum on Islam, it really touched me because Muhammad was living with that, where people were just, I mean, they were vulnerable, clan against clan, fighting for the water, no talk. And Muhammad was able to bring some truth to the people, and what happened? He was attacked, but he rose up. You know, there's more people, and there's more people gathered. So it's like an army of people that understand how this and it's talked about in the book, how the sacrificial system works. And the other thing in that book that's really profound for me, it was shared by another person. She said this changed my whole way of thinking, was that people, American flags is a mimetic response. If I don't have my flag, I'm not together, I'm not copying. So it's a way of copying one another. And when you start looking at literature, look at scripture, even the, you know, Adam and Eve story, I'll do the same. And we get paralyzed by that and get caught up in that evil that destroys each other. So that's what I think we need. Getting people together is the biggest challenge. Getting beyond thinking that this is, this is what's going to happen.
Is there some way we could capitalize on the fact that a lot of people are feeling this unity of the United States through their flags, however they do it? Is there some way, as Christians, we can capitalize on that rather than tell them that's not good and we build on that?
I think the unity comes in understanding the truth, not in, you know, some ideal. I think people are drawn into it. They got to invest. They got to read. They got to hear, listen, see a film like was shown about Islam. That did it for me. That's visual. You know, I mean, we got to think of more ways of showing this, illustrating it.
You know, we're talking a lot about out there, and that's where it gets so frustrating for me, because you can write congressmen, and I believe in it, and advocacy, but, you know, it. Even there are Congress people saying how frustrated they are. I think then that leaves us feeling hopeless and helpless. But there are resources that we can use in our homes and in our communities and in our churches, and they don't need to be reinvented. There's a lot of good peace education out there, tremendously. There's a lot of nonviolence educational materials available. The ELCA put out a wonderful booklet called Towards Sufficient Sustainable Livelihood for All. It's kind of a similar philosophy that Holden operates on, and recognition that there are plentiful resources in the world. It's the distribution of those resources. And I think those are things we can challenge ourselves privately in our own homes and in our own congregations and communities to begin to make those tough choices, to live as though I do not have a right to an inordinate amount of the world's resources. How can I share rights? How can I live so that others' lives can be sustained and healthy, like Bill was saying, and express concern for those things and help promote those things, whether it's children's vaccination and health or those things.
I would suggest finding somebody that's like-minded so you're not alone, because you can really burn out in a hurry if you're doing something that's not too popular.
Yeah, from a practical point of view, I think that Sunday is Rally Sunday for most Lutheran congregations.
Somebody pointed that out the other night. Yeah.
September 8th, I think, not September 9th.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Well, it's
just a good time.
Anyway, lots of stuff is going on in our church. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was looking for some concrete ideas about kicking off something that would continue, or something together with everything else that's going on, or maybe it needs to be in the evening versus the morning, that people will remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing I do know is that Sojourners Magazine has put together a study guide called A Moral Response to Terrorism, and for some kind of an education backbone that you wouldn't have to work really hard at developing yourself. It's a full 8-week curriculum, I think. And they have a number of different articles that are put together in various booklets with themes. So it would be a case where people could come week to week to start understanding better. I think some of the material is already slightly outdated because of the conversations that have already occurred this past year, but there are some good issues and study questions that come up.
Any others? We've had, you know, some concrete suggestions. We've had some things that are close to concrete. But any other ideas on responses you could take in your own congregation around that date, or on a longer range, or
what I'm reading.
Well, you could include some food along.
That always helps.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I would like to share the idea, whenever it's complete, you can prepare the plans for this coming September. I think it will be big issues if you plan it ahead. Whatever you would like to put it in those celebrations, prepare it and put it. There will be a good chance for the preparation, and it will be a good practice among the others, faith in the community. Otherwise, the government will plan it for you. Other people will plan it for you.
I have every hope that the ELCA website will include those resources. Usually there's something available for those special occasions.
Mm-hmm. Any excuses?
Yeah, we're close to, we've gone a long stretch, yeah.
Bill, if I could respond to your concern about the oil stupid, and you mentioned the three criteria for foreign policy. One of the issues that I've bumped into regularly is when I try to meet with my other Christian leaders in the community, I mean, the whole notion of support for Israel gets thrown in there, and the second coming, and Jesus, and I mean, it just goes crazy. And, you know, often things like that, when I try to say we need to work together on some of these things, I don't know how to bridge some of those theological chasms that, you know, so we kind of wind up a lot of these conversations with saying, well, let's just keep supporting the food shelf then. Because some of these bigger issues just start to dissolve around those, especially Israel and the Palestinians. And it's just frustrating.
I
love
the comments with Carol too, because he mentioned this to me. And I told him that if you would like Jesus to come back, will you be proud of if he asks you whether you practice his teachings, love your neighbor? Why you try to kill your neighbor in order to get the successful for yourself? How can you answer that question? And I think this kind of thing that challenges Christians about this, if you think about the coming of Jesus and how about his teaching? This is what Muslims struggle with. We have to challenge about the reality that we have to force and the teachings. How can we practice the teaching and just keep it as a theory?
Thank you. Bill, were you adding to us?
Just the last thought, in part for my own benefit. I'm going to tell a brief story. I believe a true story about Desmond Tutu. Early on, before apartheid began to dissolve, Desmond Tutu decided to hold a rally for black South Africans who were wanting to advance the Day of Justice in South Africa. And he must be an amazing optimist, because he sort of rented a soccer stadium. When the word got out that there would be South African army present in the upper reaches of the stadium with loaded automatic weapons, then 500 people came, and there were 2,000 or 3,000 soldiers with automatic weapons trained on these 500, also trained on Desmond Tutu. Desmond Tutu took the stage anyway, not worrying about the size of the crowd, and he began to address the 500. But if you've ever heard him speak, he has this wonderful lilty voice. And he looked up into the crowd of 3,000 soldiers and he said, "Chaps, come join us." He said, "Can't you see? Justice is coming to South Africa. Come join us. If you do, you'll be so happy." He said, "If you don't, when justice comes, you'll be so sad. So come and join us." And part of me wants to say, you know, I think I'm living in the midst of an empire, not an evil empire.
think America does a lot of good things, but I'm living in the midst of an empire. And like all other empires, we have the potential to lose our soul as a nation. And so that doesn't mean that God's reign of justice won't happen. It just means God won't use America. So I'm interested in preserving America's, you know, role in the global future. And I trust that God is in charge. And if we want to be, as a nation, God's handmaiden, as God establishes justice in the world, we have to make some new decisions. And I would like that level of bold conversation. The justice is coming, can't you see it? And what would it mean to be people of God in these days?
Well, it's almost 10. There are a few folk who haven't spoken, and I'd like to offer that opportunity again for... I think there's some good food for thought. There were a lot of thoughts offered and a lot of ideas. Some concrete ones, right up to even including curriculum that might be available out there for folk to use. A website, the LCA website. But then also a lot of conversation about sort of the vision of what our world might be, or what we might, what the church's role might be in the world. And it feels like a conversation that, I don't know, as I'm listening tonight and hearing all of this, one of the things I realize is I'm still sort of trapped back there. It feels like a year is almost gone and I don't know where it went. And suddenly I need to be moving ahead. And maybe that is true for a lot of people, and maybe that's true for the church, that there was a shockwave that had to be passed at some level, but that there's room to go. I'm encouraged that people of faith are starting the conversation, and that that voice can go out there. And so I want the conversation, the hope is the conversation will continue beyond this room tonight and tomorrow and in the days you're here, but also we'll go home with you as a conversation, and we'll, you know, come back into your congregations, back into your communities as a way to be thinking and acting. So does anybody else have a last word or a last?
Yeah. I would just like to say that all of us have to respect a human life. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, when we have wars, they kill human beings, and we're all at a loss for every loss of every human life. I think we have an arrogance today in this country that some lives are more worth than others. Some aren't as valuable, you know, especially white America. And I think we have to, certainly as Christians and Muslims and Jews, come back to this idea that every human life has equal value, and we're all children of God, and that we have to work towards that and respect that in other countries, so we're not so penned to go into war and kill other people. You know, we find other ways to do that, because those lives are also precious.
There has to be a better alternative than either terror or tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a way forward.
Well, thank you all
for
coming. I can't decide if people look tired or depressed.
Pensive.
Yeah, it is. These are a lot of things to think about. And tomorrow, as we go out and celebrate the Jubilee, how do we take that home too? So all of these pieces fit together.
I'm debt free.
Yeah, I know. Wouldn't that be nice? Thank you for holding
that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes, sure. Thank you. Thank you.